fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Breaking down the game in a fanatic, obsessive, bordering on unhealthy manner. This is Hockey Central Saturday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Quite an active sports day here in the city of Toronto. Of course, we're broadcasting not just in Toronto, but in Calgary as well. Welcome our hockey fans there. But of course, Raptor playoff fever they had, and no playoff fever in Toronto and Calgary, unfortunately. But we carry on with Hockey Central Saturday. Gord Stelick, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of the Sportsnet Radio Network. And we welcome our listeners on the Fan 960 from Calgary. Next 2 hours, we'll talk about the Stanley Cup playoff action. And Rick, boy, every year, same thing. It's a cliche, but you played in a lot of them, with the Calgary Flames. That first round
is scary.
It's the best in professional sports.
Well, I just, you know, and everybody asks me, it's funny because, you know, they say, who's going to win it? I say, I'll give you a better understanding after the first round's over, because certainly the experience we had in Calgary and the listeners there can certainly go through that in the 80s. You know, we had a very good team for many of those years, President's Trophy winners and all that, but we couldn't seem to get out of the first round. And when we did get out of the first round, we got beaten double overtime by Edmonton. And in 89, when we eventually went on to the Cup, we had to do, in today's game, it probably wouldn't have counted, but we had to do the kick the puck in the net to win the game seven. And, you know, then we went on and won. But the first round is scary, and it's really a lot of enthusiasm. You don't see as much structure as you see, you know, as the playoffs go on. But, I mean, it's scary to get in around the first round when it's running gun.
8 series to talk about. There's one game going on now. As a matter of fact, Eddie Olchuk, our regular Saturday afternoon contributor, will join us at the conclusion of the Chicago Blackhawks-St. Louis game that is going on. Later on, Columbus taking on the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, of course, a number of teams with one game, two games in their belt. The Anaheim Ducks, we kick things off, I would think, a pretty happy head coach, Bruce Boudreau, as they have a 2-0 series lead over the Dallas Stars. He's joining us on Hockey Central Saturday. Brucey, got a first two games so far. When you're looking at it as a marathon, hoping to play a lot of games, what have you liked about your club so far, and maybe is there a thing or two that's concerned you?
Well, one thing, coaches are never happy. so that's the first thing. But I like to...
Okay, get you. I guess we'll try to connect again with Bruce on the cell phone. It's okay. We'll grab him again, yeah. Brent. That's all. Bruce always accommodating, busy guy going on, yeah, and his team up 2-0. And we're watching, of course, the St. Louis
Hockey Night. Oh my God,
Nazem Kadri, your buddy. He's on the panel. They always add other ways that way. Okay. And again, when you talk about the Anaheim Ducks, I'll get to him about the question. But Ryan Getzlaf, there's so many different storylines there. You've got, of course, in Colorado, the different series. Matt Duchene looks like he's going to miss the entire first round. So there's injuries, adversity, bumps and bruises.
It's all part of it. It's a huge part of it. And depth, this is where depth comes in. And a lot of people, you know, wonder why they carry 8 defensemen, why they, you know, they're hardly playing the fourth line. And then all of a sudden he moves up to the third line. The guy comes up. You need the Bickles of the National Hockey League that, you know, struggled during the regular season, have great playoffs like he did last year when they won the Cup. And then, you know, again, struggled this year and seems to be pounding St. Louis right now.
Well, joining us, of course, Hockey Central Saturday, Gord Stelick, Rick Natras, and Bruce Boudreau, the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks. And, boy, coaches are never happy. I didn't know my first question would tick you off, Bruce, but anyway, just talking.
Hey, it's not my fault. I'm in a movie theater.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's outside.
What are you watching?
Draft Day? I want to see how your GMs.
Yeah, it's not from the 80s. I think they know a little bit more than today's game.
They better do it better.
I wouldn't follow Gord's lead anyway on that whole draft day thing.
Okay. Otherwise, you'll be a broadcaster. That's okay. Anyway, talk about the first two games, what you've liked, and maybe a concern or two.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I was saying I like resiliency, and we've done that all year where we get in the lead or we get ahead of teams and then we seem to quit playing a little bit, but we never quit playing to the point where we end up losing the game. I mean, someday it might bite us, but so far, I mean, the character and the willingness to block shots and do what it takes to win at the end of the game is really a big thing for us. What I haven't liked was on the same thing is our getting up and then sort of stop playing. And, you know, I mean, guys, they know that in the playoffs, you got to play for 60 minutes or something bad's going to happen. So I like the way we can defend at times, and at the same time, I don't like the way we've been letting the other teams take advantage of us.
Well, and I think you're certainly talking about the third period of last night that, you know, you sort of got the lead on that shorthanded goal, but, you know, the shots were one-sided. I don't know how many were scoring opportunities, but you seem to stop skating. I know Randy Carlisle here, he says, you know, stop breathing, stop moving your feet. Do you think that's something that, you know, you have to reinforce with your group?
Well, you do, and it's exactly what happened. Once we made it 3-1, it was like, okay, now we got to defend the lead instead of going at them and playing. And in any sport, you can see it happen in football all the time, and hockey and basketball. When you stop playing because you've got a lead and thinking you're playing a prevent defense type thing, then you're usually in trouble. And that's... we had the 4-0 lead, it was the same thing, and the 3-1 lead, it was the same thing. So we've got to correct that hopefully as soon as tomorrow or Monday.
You know, from your Washington Capitol experience, I mean, you've coached many years, played many years, been in many playoffs, but about a team that had high expectations and unfortunately couldn't do it postseason-wise, is there something maybe you learned or took from it that you can apply now?
Well, just little things like knowing how they were going to come out yesterday because of being there in the past, being up 2-0 in a series, knowing what Game 3 in their building is going to be like, and being able to relay this information. Knowing, I think, you know, when time's at duress, I think it's experience comes into play on how to slow the game down a little bit, probably the biggest thing I've learned is how to match up lines better. So, you know, I mean, coaching is you never stop learning. And I'm for sure one of those guys that tries to learn a little bit every day.
And Bruce, you like running the four lines, and I think it's, in my eyes, today's NHL is a four line type of hockey team if you want to have any success. And, you know, taking six penalties, rightly or wrongly, being aggressive last night, what's that do to your lineup, and how does that affect you matching line?
You know what? We're lucky enough, Rick, to have the depth that we can just plug in people, and my expectations from them all the time are just to be as good as the person that they're going in for, whether it's a first-line guy or a fourth-line guy. And Svitelli, who we've had up, who had a great year in the American League and was in the NHL at 18, we knew that he was ready to play. And so there was no real concern. We lose Matt Bolesky. We plug him in. We lose another guy. And we've got other people that we're pretty confident that can plug in and do the same thing. So it's a strength of ours is the depth. And that's one of the main reasons we use four lines.
Bruce Boudreau joining Gord Steldick, Rick Natras on Hockey Central Saturday. Boy, you talk about if it could be a 28-game marathon. How about a guy like Ryan Getzlaf? I think he feels like he's experienced 28 games in just two.
Already, yeah.
And his face looked like it, too. I mean, he spent quite a 72 hours. And
birth of his daughter, we're talking about, yep.
Yeah.
The birth of his daughter, but it was in the morning that day that they thought her water broke. And then he played the game, and then he went home and had to go. And his face, you know, I mean, after it took about an hour and a half to stitch him up and then go to the hospital to get a CT scan or an X-ray or whatever they call them nowadays. And when he got home, his wife went into labor and go back to the hospital and not sleep the next day and then come out and play, not being on the ice for 2 days, and play the game. He had a goal and assist and +3. Is quite remarkable and quite a testament to him.
And his leadership. And the first shift I noticed was he got physical right away. So I think that took everybody's mind off of the mouth and said, this, he's come to play. So, you know, let's go. And then you got Corey Perry, which I've had a great opportunity, Bruce, when I was with London, watching him develop as a very young man, you know, in his teens, and then see him play. And I thought Dallas probably didn't do him any justice by getting him mad, because I thought his game really picked up once he lost, you know, controlled temper.
Yeah, we call it controlled emotion, and it's like waking a sleeping giant. They ticked Corey off a little bit, and he sucked it up. And instead of retaliating, which during the course of the season he would, because he doesn't take too much from anybody, he just went at it and did his business. And he, you know, those two guys are so important to our team. I mean, we have four lines, but we definitely know where the engine is.
Yeah, Bruce, curious about the, here you are in a movie, a theater, a mall, watching a movie, good movie, the drafted one.
But let me say that I went outside, so if I have to buy another ticket.
You bill us. Gord's got an expense account here, right?
Well, that's part what I wonder about the ambience there, because you're a guy that would love to be at Maple Leaf Square. You'd be front and center if the Leafs were in or someone, you like it. I mean, you played the environment.
You're a fan, yeah.
When Washington was going, I mean, they were rocking the town. I know, talking to Brian Burke, and he talked about it was like that way in Vancouver. He said it was different in Anaheim, even when they won the Stanley Cup. It just is kind of different. What is it like in Anaheim with the Red?
Well, it's not like it would be in Toronto, obviously, but in the regular season, it's sort of subdued. I mean, it's not a loud crowd, and because there's a lot of new people getting into hockey, and they don't know all the nuances. But I will say, when we play LA or San Jose, or when we played playoff games last night, it was as loud as most buildings that I've been in. I mean, I don't think it'd be as loud as Montreal will be, but it was really loud for us, and it gets our guys going as well as anything.
Well, we're hoping you don't have to pay to go back in the theater. So now, so far, have you liked the movie so far?
I don't know. It hadn't started yet.
Although, you better get in. The first part's always boring.
Missed all the trailers. That's fine, you know.
Kevin Costner, right? So there you go.
Gord, you'll pay for it somehow in the end. I know that.
I would gladly pay for it sometime in the end. Hey, Bruce, you always like to talk hockey. I like that. Through thick and thin. And congratulations on the start. And I hope you keep it going, and always appreciate you
joining.
Yeah, good luck,
Bruce. Thanks very much.
All right, guys, thanks. See you in the summer.
We can find out Bruce Boudreau gets back in the theater. That would be
a guy. No, but that's a good movie, lady. You could see him go to that, because it's part of it. You know, it's one of those inspiration movies that I, you know, you can talk what you want about Kevin Costner, but he's had some good movies, you know what I mean, in regards to sports theme.
Well, Bruce is a guy that, you know, years ago he was spotted. Why? By the way, Bruce Boudreau, head coach of the Anaheim Ducks, kicking things off with Gord Stone.
I wonder if he's having popcorn. I bet you as much as you got in your pocket, he's having a big bag.
But he was once behind there was a Jays game in Washington, and he was wearing a bright, like, flowery shirt, so everyone picked him out, got all kinds of calls there, and he loved the, you know, hanging around the Washington Redskins and all that. So, I mean, that's the thing. You know, he's a guy that went the tough route as a player, then the real tough route as a coach. And you talk about
very
paying
tough bolting. I mean, both. I mean, a prolific scorer in junior, and then, you know, didn't really get an opportunity, but not really. I mean, I guess it's questionable. But then again, coaching took for how many years? 15 years? Was it 17, 18 years? Something
forever.
Like that.
Forever.
To get to the NHL.
Good on him. Back on him. Yes. He was probably the coach that was unemployed the least. As he always said, it was he got fired on a Monday morning.
Took his buddy's job.
took Randy Carlyle's job, and he's back home. And then he sees it's like 2 hours after, and his cell phone rings, and it's George McPhee, and he's going, I don't know if I want to talk to him or not. He just fired me 2 hours ago. Anyway, he decides, picks it up, and he just said, Bob Murray may be calling you.
Yeah, so go down to Anaheim. And
wait for the phone call.
Well, it's weird because he saw the last game of Randy's. How was that? They brought him in.
He's in Anaheim the next
weekend.
Day.
Yeah, to watch that weekend game, and then Randy gets released, and he starts, I believe his first day was the Sunday or the Monday.
Maybe he'll succeed him here in Toronto.
Well, you know what? And he's under the gun. He's one of those guys that have had a lot of success in the regular season. Unfortunately, last year, we talked about Corey Perry, first goal in 11 games last night. In the playoffs, and we know how prolific he's been during the regular season, but there's one of the reasons why they lost in 7 to Detroit, because of the fact is they couldn't score any goals last year.
Well, we will, of course, follow all the series that are going. We're going to switch gears and talk to Phil Bork in a few minutes' time. Pittsburgh Penguins taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. We'll also keep you posted. The Blues right now leading the Chicago Blackhawks. Eddie Olchuk will join us right after that game. But that's your guy played the physical game, Rick, and the Milan Lucic hit the $5,000 fine.
Brutal.
You know, in some ways, I wish a guy almost got either exonerated or suspended.
Well, he should have got
I think
he should have got it. It was chicken, whatever the last word is. You almost let
chicken
it
bleep,
out.
But I'm just, yeah, no, but even
crap,
then,
yeah.
give him nothing
he
or give him
something.
He
is a tough guy. This is why I don't, I lost perspective on how I thought. You know, the perspective I had on him was a tough guy, played a pretty honest game, you know, up and down.
Saw that
in
Toronto last year.
No, you know
year,
what
boy.
I mean?
Yeah.
And then I see that twice. It wasn't the first time. I mean, he's got a real problem with Detroit defensemen because I think it was Cromwell that he did it first time.
This time to Kaiser
this time. But this time was like I said, you know what? My worst enemy, that would be my last resort. You know what I mean, Gord, if I ever you got into a fight. I always thought when we were kids and stuff. But for him to do that, it knocked a few, you know, the brightness off of what type of player I thought he was. I thought, you know, that was from behind first and foremost. And, you know, he's in your face type of guy. But I thought that was true chicken crap, as you said. And just to get the 5,000, I guess, you know, if you're a coach, you grab your crotch and you get $25,000 fine. Quinville, we're talking about in Chicago, but you can spear somebody from behind in the same area and only get $5,000. So what do you think everybody else is going to do when you're making $6 million a year?
Quinville should have speared the referee.
Yeah, he should have, and then he would have got, $7,500 fine.
That's just, you know, I never thought we'd be discussing that part of the anatomy.
No, but it's twice. The first time, okay. But this time was even, you know, more direct. And the Kaiser played big minutes with the, you know, for Detroit last night, and he was one of the factors why, you know, Lucic was very frustrated. That whole line, Krejci, you know, and Iginla, they didn't have a lot of zip, only four shots on net. But, again, I thought it was Bush League and beyond Bush League.
Well, the other part that wasn't was the goal by Pavel Datsyuk.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, you watch a game like that, and that's exactly what everyone's saying today. And I got to go back to a moment. They're saying it's the first time in, like, 40 years these two teams have played.
So it's 57.
Yeah, in the
57
years. Since Boston, Detroit have met, of course, and none of these guys were around then.
No.
But I thought one of my favorite moments in the All-Star game, which can be kind of cheesy, that whole draft they do.
Yeah.
But it was the one in Ottawa, and Zdeno Chara was drafting the Eastern Conference team, and he got up there. He's pretty, pretty
New York Islanders.
Yeah, pretty glib, fun guy. But he got up there, and of course, they took all Boston Bruin players, like Tim Thomas, and that's what they do, right? But he got up there, and he said, I talked to my teammates, and I said,
oh, the All-Star game. I'm sorry.
The All-Star guy said, would it be okay? I'd like to take Pavel Datsyuk as our first pick because I've always respected the way he played. Now, they're in different conferences then. He wouldn't see Datsyuk very often. No. And as we say, they never played
probably the Olympics.
And I thought, you know, that spoke volumes because to me, the players, when they say that, that's the biggest compliment you can get.
With and without the puck. I mean, and you saw.
Saw it last night firsthand.
Well, we saw it. I believe it was the first period. And Datsuk's in the corner with Chara. And, you know, he's protecting the puck. And he backs into Chara. Chara's coming. They're down by the, in between the hash mark and the goal line. He backs in to get, you know, Chara a little bit standing upright. And then he sort of, it's a 3-on-1. And he keeps the puck in, takes it up to the blue line, dumps it back in the corner. Chara's, I don't know if he's looking at him or yelling at him. Because Datsuk goes off and changes. And then Chara goes off and changes. But you know he had a comment for him. Probably say, I'm not going to draft you next All-Star game. But then you see that play. And I said to you earlier about the neutral zone, where he tucks it in just inside the blue line, their blue line. And he reaches behind him. And, you know, okay, Marchand and a couple guys, because you're down a goal, it's nothing-nothing. You might think, but Bergeron's there. And I'm thinking, this is one of the best guys in the game as well. And you think that he could do that around Bergeron and Marchand. That's like within, you know, we're talking baby blanket, throw it over the three players. He does that, and then he uses, and, you know, Educator does a great job really eliminating both Chara and Hamilton on that play. But, you know, what a shot, what a screen. Guys wouldn't even get it through, and just the whole play was, are you kidding me, right?
Well, the other thing is, you know, so we're talking about, we'll come back, talk more about the Columbus-Pittsburgh game, which is later on tonight. Right now it's 2-1, St. Louis leads Chicago, so it's a close one in the third period. We'll keep you posted on that. But, you know, the other parts about it, and as I kicked off just saying, first Toronto Raptor playoff basketball game in a number of years. The atmosphere is down electric at Maple Leaf Square. I know our friends living, listening in Calgary, really the Red Mile in 2004 was a big thing that started. Yeah. That was just phenomenal. Matter of fact, the Sportsnet said, I can remember, it was getting a little out of hand and they had to get security for guys like Nick Kypros and that because when people were a little inebriated at the end. But they started that whole celebration that way. And just seeing the Raptors today, you could go, oh, my God. And the little bit the Leafs had last year, this city here would be rocking. Calgary with Brian Burke would be rocking right now. It's such a shame there's just one Canadian base.
And team. They're holding their breath for a winner here. We know that. Not only, you know, we saw some great teams with the Blue Jays in the early 90s, back-to-back World Series. And then you really haven't, you know, the Raptors, they had a couple good runs, but nothing that, you know, extended. You know, the Jays have been, unfortunately, for the last 20 years. I mean, after that, hasn't done very well. And we all know, unfortunately, the history of the Leafs right now. But you saw how that affected going, you know, not only, you know, being down 3-1, winning game four, I mean, game five in Boston, come back winning game six the Leafs last year, and then going to game seven. And the weather, Gord, and the people that were out there, you know, for that game seven game when it was in Boston was amazing. And when I saw on the paper that they were going to put the same type of facility out for the Raptor faithful, and I was thinking, you know, people were questioning maybe if it was going to work or wasn't. I knew exactly, you know, right away that it was going to be a big thing.
Well, it got going so much, the Raptor G actually uttered an expletive and dissed the Brooklyn team. He apologized at halftime about it. But anyway, so that's the kind of fever it was that way. Hopefully, there'll be more Stanley Cup fever in Canadian-based cities next year. It's not so far. We'll talk about who's in. When we come back, we'll head down to Columbus. We'll head down to Pittsburgh, preview that match coming up tonight. All the playoff action, we've got it all covered for you right here on Hockey Central Saturday. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Analysis and insight that you can't get anywhere else. This is Hockey Central Saturday with Gord Stellick and Rick Natras on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back, Hockey Central Saturday. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, the Sportsnet Radio Network, talking about the best time of the year if you're a hockey fan, and if you're really a fan of any professional sports, I'm hard-pressed to find anything that replicates what we see in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. A little biased, but certainly it's quite often that's the one. If you can endure that, get through it, that's a test about making it to the finals.
Well, and this is, you know, you got teams that sneak in, you got teams that, you know, come in and a lot of enthusiasm. You never know, as again, you could have your eighth seed go against your number one. And we look at Detroit, we look at Anaheim, we just had Bruce Boudreau on, and you look at that scenario right there. You had the best team in the National Hockey League, President Trophy winner. And I said that, Gord. It's funny. After the Olympic breaks, what did I mention when we first came back? That the President's Trophy winner, over the last, whatever, since 2010, they've beat out three times, the President's Trophy winners.
Well, there we go. And talk
eight
about
seats.
By the way, Blackhawks now 3 unanswered goals. They lead the Blues 3-2. The Blues did have a 2-0 lead. Of course, later on will be the Pittsburgh Penguins and Columbus Blue Jackets, able to grab a couple of minutes with a man who will be busy tonight, Phil Bourque, the radio analyst. Hey, Phil, thanks very much for making time,
yes,
as always.
Thanks,
it's
Phil.
Talk about a team in Pittsburgh trying to gauge a lot of injuries and as far as they are revved up for the playoffs.
We're tired of talking about injuries. In fact, we're done. I mean, we're actually, this is as healthy as the Penguins have been all season long. I mean, Pascal Dupuis is still on the shelf, and Marcel Gotch is on the shelf but skating. He skated the last 3 days with his ankle injury, and maybe we see him later in the series if it goes long. But we're pretty healthy, especially on the backside with our defensemen, and we've got 9 healthy defensemen. They sent Simon Dupré down to Wilkes-Barre-Scranton to get some games in, but we're good to go, and we need to get healthier as far as our urgency against these Columbus Blue Jackets, because I don't know if the Penguins took them a little bit lightly in that game number one, or if it was just the Blue Jackets not being nervous or anxious at all in game one, and I thought they took it to the Penguins the first half of game one.
Well, yeah, and I look at, they're trying to be physical. You see, you know, what they're trying to do to Letang and Crosby and, you know, shadowing and finishing checks, and we saw Letang maybe lose his cool a little bit, And we saw the coach of Pittsburgh.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, okay, I'm trying to be nice. I thought maybe you were going to be he's okay.
Nice.
Okay, well, he did. He took a couple giveaways, took a bad penalty, and then we saw his ice time reduced in the third period.
Yeah, that, to me, and I'm probably going to choose my words a little carefully here, too, because that was unacceptable. It really was.
It was selfish. It was selfish.
To be quite frank about it. It was selfish. I mean, listen, we've all played the game, and I just don't know how you go back and look your teammates in the eye You've let down your fans. You've let down your teammates. You've let down the ownership group. That's just unacceptable for that to happen. In fact, I thought it should have been a five-minute spearing major. I thought it should have been, he was lucky it was only 2 minutes, and he's lucky that the Blue Jackets didn't score on that, because it was just when the Penguins had battled back, I think, when he took that penalty to tie things up. So he's had a very strong conversation, I'll leave it at that, with head coach Dan Bylsma. I don't see it happening again. Maybe this will be a blessing in disguise, but he's not the only one, guys, that have has committed these types of selfish fouls before in the playoffs for the Penguins. And maybe this will help those other guys. We don't have to mention their names. You know who I'm talking about, that have committed these fouls before. And maybe with Letang being kind of the poster child here in game number one, maybe it'll help those other guys to button up their game.
Well, and let's look at that, because we talked about last year against Philly and, you know, the different things here. Do you feel that maybe that's one of the things that, you know, everybody, there's a lot of success during the regular seasons, points, you know, a lot of guys are getting points. Great year by Crosby being healthy first and foremost. But do you think other guys are just taking it a little bit more about me than about the team?
It's, yeah. I mean, I don't know any other way to, you can't sugarcoat it. It is. It's a selfish thing. I just can't believe it has crept back into our game, because you're right. In that Philadelphia series, that was the big bugaboo, that we were just melting down. They get under our skin, they pushed our buttons, and we just completely melted down and forgot about winning hockey games in the playoffs. It was more about retribution and getting the guy back right away, no matter what it cost anybody. So, you know, I just can't believe that we're actually having this conversation again, to be quite frank about it, that, you know, this should be about, you know, getting the bounces, that the special teams are working good, that Marc-Andre Fleury's playing good. We should be talking about those little things, not talking about, man, I hope the Penguin Stars are going to be disciplined enough to win a playoff game.
Well, let's talk about Marc-Andre Fleury. You win a Stanley Cup, he gives phenomenal goaltending. He's done it so often in the regular seasons, but it's always been a bit of a wild card in the playoffs. Strong game number one. I'm just curious, your thoughts on the Penguin goaltender?
He was good. He was good. He wasn't great. I thought that Derek McKenzie shorthanded goal, tricked him a little bit, a bit of a butterfly over his blocker. He was good. After the Penguins were able to battle back and get the two power play goals to knot things up, that's when really he was his best. So I would give him a solid B in the game if I was grading him, hoping to see more A game from Marc-Andre Fleury. And I dare you to name a more talented goaltender. If we're just talking about reflexes, athletic ability, I dare you to name a more talented. I know Jonathan Quick, and there's some other really, Henrik Lundqvist, some more other talented goaltenders, but Marc-Andre Fleury has all the skills. It's that little P between the ears is the thing that's going to put him over the top, and that is just being relaxed and confident and know that he can do it and know that his teammates are going to play good in front of him. So a lot of times he's like a pitcher. He's like a quarterback that, you know, just if the offensive line is just Swiss cheese, you know, you're going to point the finger at the quarterback. You're going to point the finger at the offensive line. So, you know, it's not all on Marc-Andre Fleury, but he just can't let in those soft ones where media, fans, players on his team are going, oh boy, here we go again.
Yeah, and to put that question mark, and I think, you know, the way the first period started, being down 3-1 or whatever early, and then coming back and him having a strong game after that, certainly has to put a little bit of that to rest, but only time will tell with him.
Sure.
Talking about the back end specifically, and, you know, and I'm a firm believer, you know, I mean, you give up 34 shots. Are they quality shots, you think, that you're giving up, or do you feel that the defense, because it has been was depleted all year, you know, top six guys out of the lineup at one point, I believe in December, on the back end. How do you feel that's working, not only with the defenseman, but the five-man unit type of defense?
We don't do a whole lot of five-man unit stuff. But as far as the tandems, with Orpik playing with Martin, Scuderi playing with Letang, and then Olli Mäntylä playing with Matt Niskanen, that's exactly what you envision all year, and it's refreshing. I think it was maybe five games, guys, all season long, where we had those six guys right in place, which is incredible that we were able to battle through and finish on top of the Metropolitan Division. But to get to your question, those 34 shots, I would not say there was a ton of, you know, grade A, high quality shots. There was a lot of outside shots. I thought the Blue Jackets did a good job of injecting their defensemen into their offense. Jack Johnson maybe had the best game I've ever seen him play. And, you know, James Wisniewski can bring it from the point. So they have some guys back there that are underrated that will get pucks towards the cage. So I would not say that it was 34 shots and half of them were quality chances. I'd say it's more maybe 25% of them.
I know you got to get to work, Phil. Thanks very much for making time with us.
Good luck, bud.
You got it. Anytime. Enjoy it, guys. Enjoy the hockey talk.
Phil Bork, radio analyst for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Of course, finally, they'll be playing about 90 minutes. They'll take on the Columbus Blue Jackets.
And it's finally good that he says, because I felt the last few years, as much as Pittsburgh's been one of the elite teams, they haven't played like an elite team because, to me, it's been selfish. And not with the puck, away from, between the whistles, after the whistles, all that kind of stuff, I think has been their downfall in my personal view. Plus, Fleury needs to be better. We know that.
Well, the game, what was it? Was it 3 years ago? I'm trying to get my years right. The Pittsburgh-Philadelphia afternoon game. Sunday afternoon, because I can remember, actually, it was a kid's
Two years ago, but three series.
I got it.
Playoffs ago.
And looking at it, and I remember it was surreal.
Yeah.
The one period in particular, and it was incredible. Couturier and others, they got Sidney Crosby off his game. They got everybody off
Giroux
his game.
Giroux hit him right the first shift.
The goaltender didn't make any saves.
No, and we saw Fleury last year. Philly didn't make the playoffs last year, but 2 years ago, that series, I mean, Brizgalov was there. You saw that. I mean, as bad as Fleury was, because he was so bad, Brizgalov never got noticed. The goaltending on both ends were very bad, as they were with Long Island with Fleury and Nabokov last year as well, Gord. So Fleury's got it. I like the way he came back, but he's certainly going to have to steal a game for them.
No doubt about it. And again, go back about the Letang thing when you talk about being selfish.
Yeah. So, well, that's at the end of the day, he's a guy that, came back, good for him. We're glad he's healthy. First and foremost, we're glad he's alive. And now he's playing. So it's interesting that if he feels that he was a target before he got sick, so why do you think he's not a target now? And he needs to be mentally tough because of the fact is if he loses it, they lose a big part of their back end.
Well, again, we talked about the Pittsburgh point of view. Another busy guy tonight. We'll get to grab him for a few minutes is Jody Shelley, the analyst for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Jody, thanks for making a little bit of time. We had Phil Bork on earlier, and maybe talk about your impressions on a team that had the lead, and unfortunately, Pittsburgh was able to escape with the win.
Well, yeah, it was a nice setting here in the first period in game one for the Blue Jackets. They came out, really established their presence, and really established and dictated the pace of play. I don't know if they surprised the Pittsburgh Penguins or not, but it was a good feeling and a feeling of confidence. They responded after the Pittsburgh tied it up 1-1. The Blue Jackets got on the power play, made it 2-1 right away, and it was a good feeling. But then they got away from the game a little bit. Pittsburgh's an experienced team, took advantage of their opportunities, and that's kind of where it ended up for game one.
Yeah, and certainly, giving up two power play goals on three opportunities is something that, middle of the pack, 15th in the league this year. How did you see that materializing in regards to, Pittsburgh's very good on the power play? Is it just stay out of the box or you got to be better?
Well, they only gave up three power plays, but Pittsburgh, like I said, they're opportunistic. They're a team that, and Todd Richards, the coach, was not upset with the number of penalties.
Three's not bad. So, yeah.
No, three's not bad, but, they do have to stay away from that. They have to try their best, obviously. To any advantage they're going to give Pittsburgh is going to, it's just like shoot themselves in the foot. I thought towards the end of the game, it wasn't special teams. It was the way that they weren't passing the puck. They were flipping the puck out. When Pittsburgh gets that puck in the neutral zone, you guys know, they attack. And so the more that the Columbus just kind of sat back and tried to flip their way through the third period, Pittsburgh just came on, and it just came on heavy. And the Blue Jackets, I think they learned a valuable lesson. And I think the most valuable thing, and the sense they got in the room after speaking to a couple guys, is they know they can beat Pittsburgh. That's how they felt leaving here the other night.
Well, we've certainly seen in Toronto the best of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Holy boy, that's probably a big reason you're in and Toronto's not in, the wins and the way they played. But in general, Jody, you try to find an identity. For so many years, it was Rick Nash and some other guys there. What identity have you seen this team forge?
Well, it's an exciting identity. It's a blue-collar, work hard. There's no captain. It's lead by committee. It's win by committee. And there's no one that can take a shit off. There's no superstars. I don't know if the Blue Jackets have ever had a real identity, and that's been one of the problems here. They have one now, and it starts with their goaltender, Sergei Bobrovsky. He's the ultimate workhorse, and everyone follows, and they get it. And they get it. They got it last year in their playoff push, missing the playoffs by a point, and they got it all through the year. When they lost this year, they lost because they got away from what they're supposed to do, to a man. And that's just how this team works. And it's an encouraged group. They're young. and they get it. And when you have a young group that gets what they are, it's fun to be around. And I think that is their true identity, which is an exciting. I mean, if you're a fan of this team or you watch, you're pretty proud of how they work and what they do.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. Their work ethic and the willingness to finish checks dominated in that hit department. Again, that can be misleading sometimes. Sometimes they say you're chasing the puck. That's why you lead the team in hits. But I thought, and I did watch the game, Jody, that the aggressiveness and the body contact was a factor that, you know, a game plan trying to get in, certainly against Letang, you know, Dubinsky against Crosby, those type of things to get them off their game. Because we've seen, and we talked about Phil Burke about this with Phil, about them losing their composure. Is that something that Columbus took into consideration?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're going to go in a prize fight or in a fight against anyone, you look for any kind of edge. So that's definitely a weakness of Pittsburgh. And you can look to the Philadelphia Flyers this season, their last game of the year, or you can look at the series a couple years ago where they used that tactic. They went after them. And they almost, you get the sense that Pittsburgh is sometimes some of these guys feel like they can't be hit or they can't be touched, you know, and the Blue Jackets kind of went after that. And you talk about all the hits. The Columbus Blue Jackets, they know they're fast, and they don't use their speed necessarily to go down the wing wide and try to take it to the net, but they definitely use it to close space and time on the forecheck and on the backcheck. They have that kind of hustle mentality, and that's why they get the hits. They use that speed. They use their tenacity. They're not the biggest bunch of forwards. You look at Matty Calvert, he's under 6 feet, but, boy, he's fast, and he's got that hustle. They have to use it a little more, though. You bring that a good point to get Pittsburgh off kilter a little bit. They got to use that more. They got to go after Crosby a little more. They got to get on Fleury for the whole game. You know, they kind of had him down the last game. He had 3 goals in on 12 or 13 shots, and it was really one of those feelings in the building of uneasiness, but kind of let them off the hook. So all those things he brought up, I think you have to. That has to be the game plan, but you got to do it for the whole game, and that's really the challenge here in Pittsburgh.
Well, the great part is you do have a whole game to do tonight, so we'll let you get at it, Jody.
Jody,
all the
thanks,
best,
buddy.
Okay, thanks for joining
good
us.
Good luck, eh?
Thanks, guys.
Hey. Jody Shelley joining us, color voice for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Gord Steldick, Rick Natras, Hockey Central Saturday. Boy, the end of
the
Chicago-St. Louis game, a Brent Seabrook hit on David Backes, and Backes hurt on the play, getting up slow, and you got a slash just before that on
Oshie.
You got that as far as Oshie on Keith. Let's find out. Seabrook out of the game now, so we'll find out.
That's interesting. I mean, that to me, I don't know. I mean, we're seeing the replay in a little bit slower, but at the same time, I think that's a bad call. I thought that was a good hit, being a defenseman, of course.
Well,
I'm back to saying anybody that lets up when he wants to hit people because he's a beast. But I thought Seabrook, being that leader, scored a goal tonight. He scored a goal tonight, and now we see both of them go after probably two of the premier players on St. Louis.
Well, and the St. Louis Blues had a 2-0 lead. The Blackhawks had come back and now lead it 3-2. It's late in the third period. Joel Quenneville has already been fined the other night.
Yeah,
he's quite animated now.
Grabbing his armpit. I wonder what's that mean.
How much
is that worth?
Well, the time of the game. It's interesting because here's a game that could be a huge win for the Blackhawks, and then to have this play happen again. Unfortunate if David Backes is injured. But again, we'll get an interpretation of it. Eddie Olczyk is going to join us next hour. He's doing the game for NBC, so we always talk to him about what's going on around the National Hockey League, and still a number of minutes to be played in this game, but obviously this will be a hot-button topic.
Just under 5 minutes, yeah, and this is, you know, the series that we looked at. You got two very good teams, as you do San Jose, L.A. in the West. I mean, both these teams, these games are series are the Western Hockey League, and you're going to, you know, two potential Stanley Cup champions could be out in the first round. And we talked about the first round, Gordon. These are the matchups that the NHL wanted. These are the matchups that the NHL, when they redid the format, they wanted to see these guys play in their own backyards. And we're seeing some pretty brutality, which is great.
Well, I mentioned the intensity again. We'll keep you posted that game, of course. Talking about the other games that are going on, and we chatted with Bruce Boudreau a little bit earlier, the Columbus-Pittsburgh series we've touched on as well. Hey, the one Canadian-based NHL team, I got to say, game number 83, it's always key. You know, when people do their hockey pools, like, okay, it's a 3-6 or whatever it may be, or 4. But really, the point difference isn't all that much, or even a 2-7. The point difference isn't that much. Then you get in the playoffs, and you try to find who's going hot, who's not going hot as much. Boy, Montreal is firing on all cylinders, where the Tampa Bay Lightning, been to me a big time disappointment.
Well, you know what? First and foremost, the goaltending. I don't think you can blame Lindback for that, to be honest with you. I just think that, you know, they're a one-dimensional team now. Stamkos, you had Johnson and you had Palat, and now you lose Palat after only two periods in this series. Doesn't look like he's going to be back anytime soon. That sort of, that gives you a two-thirds of a really good line. Other teams, other people on the Tampa Bay Lightning have struggled to score goals of late, and we're seeing Montreal really close things off in the neutral zone, Gordon. This is Tampa team that likes to gain the zone and get shots on net and then second opportunities, and Montreal's not getting close to it. And the difference between game one and game two was Carey Price was not giving up rebounds or not giving up soft goals.
And just so you know, that's going on still. St. Louis, two-man power play for a bit, now down to one. Seabrook got five and a game for charging. And
yeah,
it'll be interesting. So this will be reviewed, supplementary discipline. We talked to Bill Daly early in the week. He's involved now. Stephen Kintell is taking over as the chief disciplinarian, but Bill Daly and others working closer. And, you know, the thing about the Lucic fine is it's how you set the table.
Yeah.
You've set it kind of low. You've set the bar kind of low with that.
For that, right? I mean, there's two areas that I believe, you know, head and groin. And I think, you know, seriously, and you know, I joke about it and whatnot, but again, I thought that Lucic situation was gutless. And from a guy that I had a lot of respect of because of the way he played, it really diminished that, you know, that for me. I just want to talk about that call there. You look at the Anaheim game against Dallas, and they're killing a penalty. They score the third goal, Cogliano. He slashes Gonchar's stick behind the net when Dallas is on the power play, breaks it. The refs right there doesn't make the call because he doesn't want to put Anaheim on a 5-on-3. They end up scoring, so he doesn't want to be a cause of for the, you know, outcome of the game, but he ends up being a cause for outcome of the game because of the fact that he didn't call something that should have been called, that was called all year and should have been called there.
Well, it's funny in the playoffs, we see too that I know a lot of officials hated getting the delay of game to put teams two down. There's no choice in that call. And then there was the one last year when they threw the guy out the second time and they put him two down. It was a neutral zone face-off.
Yeah, have you ever seen that again?
No. And I think now, I was noticing the end of the year, Rick, I thought a lot of guys were starting to drop their stick a little easy, that they were getting that call. It's sort of...
For the slash you're talking about now,
if you had to slash and knock it out of your
hands... But this was broken.
I know.
I don't like to slash, knock it out of your hands because it's hang on. You know, when I was in Montreal, there was two things that the veterans used to do to me. First, they'd fire the puck as hard as they could at me, and I'm thinking, are they picking on me? And then the Jacques Lapierre, the coach, said, no, this is how we pass the puck in Montreal. And the other thing, I'm skating around, and Guy Lafleur would try to whack my stick out of my hand. And, you know, it's like that, the running back, right? The coach, tape that football to his arm and don't drop it the rest of your life, right? Or you're never going to get it again. So these are the things I find difficult. But if you break the sticks, and we know they're easy to break and all that other stuff, but if you break a stick, then I find it being a penalty. It should be an automatic.
Yeah.
If you knock it out of their hands, unless you're, you're tomahawking, I think sometimes I have a problem with that one.
I think as officials, and they have the best official, they're great at all year, and that's a goal in the playoffs.
These ones right here did the gold medal game for Chicago, St. Louis.
Yeah, Kelly Sutherland and Brad Meyer doing that. But just in general, a 5-on-3 is almost an automatic goal with teams of this caliber, almost. So I think that's the way they look at it. Anyway, as we say, it's been some interesting games, no more spirited than this one. And when we come back, we'll find out it's just about, a little over 2 minutes left. It's a barn burner. It's been... unfortunately, some ugliness at the end. David Backes
5-on-4 now.
Out of the game. Blues on a power play. And we'll find out if they can tie it up. Eddie Olchuk will join us sometime next hour if he has finished his duties. Meanwhile, we'll head to the Colorado Avalanche, talk about one of the real pleasant surprises. And how about Nathan MacKinnon, how he's played in game number one. So we'll come back with more Hockey Central Saturday. We've got it all covered. Gord Stelick, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. All the skinny on tonight's Games of Shinny. This is Hockey Central Saturday with Gord Stelick and Rick Natras on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Petrangelo drops it back. 8 seconds to go. Tarasenko scores! 6 seconds to go. Tarasenko ties.
Well, that's the excitement. That's where we're going to have sudden death overtime once again in this 2014 Stanley Cup playoff season. Tarasenko with the goal, 6 seconds left. It's a 3-3 tie. Chicago Blackhawks, St. Louis Blues head into overtime. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras, welcoming you back to Hockey Central Saturday. We cover all that's going on around the Stanley Cup playoff action on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. It also means Eddie Olchuk, we don't know when he'll get him because he's going to be, he's covering that game for NBC. A lot of controversy about that.
There is.
The hit
and
by
I'm
Seabrook on
again.
Backus. He got 5 and a charge. It'll be reviewed for supplementary discipline and certainly change the complexion. Yeah. That was a power play goal that made the difference. I mean, it was quite a significant penalty.
Well, 6 seconds left in the in the game to tie it up, and I'm watching this. And a lot, playoffs are scary, and it's and I miss it. To be honest with you, but some of the stuff that's going on there, the knee, from Bickle. Some of the slashes we saw, that kind of stuff's crap. But I'm watching the Seabrook hit again, Gordon. I'm missing it, not getting the right angle here. But he came from below the hash mark into the corner there, and I don't see him moving his elbow up. Everybody said an elbow to the head and contact. Well, again, he's facing up the ice trying to make a play, Backus. And as a defenseman, what do? You take out their top centerman, and he's a big boy. And I said, does he deserve to be hit to the head? I say no, but does he deserve to be hit hard? I say yes, because he hits everybody else hard.
Well,
the
hit and the penalty a factor, obviously,
The
power play and it being tied up. They head into overtime. We'll switch gears, talk about what a great game. Maybe Bruin fans aren't thinking it was a great game in that sense when you don't win, but what a beauty goal by Pavel Datsyuk.
Oh.
A lot of intensity last night. They are now Red Wings up 1-0 in that series against the Boston Bruins. Our friend Leah Hextall from New England Sports Network, reporter, anchor, joining us. Leah, first of all, thanks for joining us as always. And we know we talked to you earlier in Pittsburgh way about it. So when you cover a team, you can't get into too much details about things in a certain way. And we're talking about the Brent Seabrook situation here in Chicago. And what a day after the Milan Lucic situation, what's the scuttlebutt in Boston?
Well, I mean, obviously, gentlemen, we know that it was a missed call last night. I think Milan, if he could take it back, probably would. He's getting fined $5,000 by the league for it. It's not what we want to see in it, but there's not a lot of talk about it right now in the market. It was just simply that this is his punishment, this is his penalty. He spoke very briefly about it today in the morning skate, just saying that he didn't have a hearing, but he did have a phone call with the league, and we now know the result on it.
Yeah, and I mean, we've made our comments, so we're not going to put you under any pressure, Leah, in regards to what we thought about it. I thought it was, it sort of took the luster off Lucic for me because of the fact is I think I always thought he was an honest, straight up, in your face, let's go kind of guy. And we saw him do it earlier, maybe not to the extent of this one, but it wasn't very good. I know there was a lot of frustration on his part. The Kaiser and Cromwell did a good job against that line. Only 4 shots for one each, I believe, for Lucic and Iggy, and then 2 for Krejci. So there was a lot of frustration in that, a lot of frustration with the Boston Bruins in regards to not being able to come through the neutral zone with speed. Did you see that being a factor in the outcome?
Oh, absolutely it was. I think they know, and this was one of the messages today, that they have to figure out some offensive ability coming into game 2, and the fact that they have to spend more time in the offensive zone. And as you mentioned, the top line was shut down last night. But the fact of the matter is that when it comes to the playoff guys, as you guys know, all these teams are so good that the top 2 lines really cancel each other out. And it's really that third line, which is going to be so key for the Boston Bruins in order to have any success. And as we know, Chris Kelly right now is injured, and he's a big pivotal part of that third line, not only because does he help them get going, he also keeps them defensively responsible. He also chips in offensively. And as we know, when the Bruins won the Cup back in 2011, it was their third line and that secondary scoring that was produced from Kelly and Rich Peverly and Michael Ryder that really had great influence in them having success. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can get Kelly back. Justin Pulisic fit in last night on that third line, but doesn't quite lend what Kelly does, obviously, to Soderberg and Louis Erickson in that. But if they want to get some goals and if they want to get going, that third line has to produce. And also, we can't, let the top 2 lines off the hook. But Bergeron line, obviously going to be a defensive role. They're going to go against the Datsyuk line. They're not going to produce offensively the way they did in the regular season. So that top line is going to have to get going, and they're going to have to figure a way to beat Jimmy Howard.
Leah, there's a lot of games being decided by goals late in a game, whether to win it or put it into overtime. And you hate to get beat by a chintzy goal. Boy, that was anything but. If you're going to get beat, that's one of the all-world goals by Pavel Datsyuk.
You know, we couldn't even help it. We were sitting there watching it, and when it occurred, you just kind of look at each other and smile and laugh, because they call him the Magic Man for a reason. I mean, this guy, Nick Cromwell, he dug it out, you know, kind of put it up a little bit, but the fact is Datsyuk, he reached like 5 feet back, came through the middle, let off a shot, like, even if Ablicator hadn't been going through the middle and crashing the net, that's going to beat to the rest. Tudor didn't even expect him to shoot it. He thought he was going to pass it, and it just, he rifled that thing mesh. Like, the guy is one of the best in the world, and that is a goal.
And certainly it was I don't care, you know, if you're working for a team or working for anybody else, you have to appreciate that, because that's
absolutely
what hockey's all about, right? I want to talk about, you know, you had Corey Potter in there because of the flu symptoms, Miller being out and a couple other guys. I thought, you know, not that I thought he played a pretty good game, but again, Detroit did a very good job, I thought, on their forecheck and managing the puck in the Bruins zone. And not that I watched him all the time, Leah, but I watch a lot of Bruins game, and I can't remember the last time that I think that I saw that them be, I don't want to say dominated, but really the time management of puck possession in their zone was certainly favored Detroit.
You know, Detroit's all about that, and anyone will tell you. I mean, they're a great team when it comes to puck possession, and that's how you have to beat them. You have to be able to knock them off of it. And as you alluded to, they were missing two of their top four defensemen last night, and Matt Barkowski and Kevin Miller, they were both out with the flu. I think we're going to see them be players when it comes to Sunday. They were back on the ice today, and it looks like they're going to be ready to go. But Andre Mazaros, I don't really want to call him a fill-in because he is an NHL guy, but Corey Potter, I thought he did a really good job. He was that steady presence, kind of stayed at home, didn't make mistakes, which I think is the biggest thing for someone who's making their Stanley Cup playoff debut. And really, it was only his, you know, fourth game in the Bruins system. So I thought they did a good job filling in, but you're absolutely right. They have to find a way to knock Detroit off the puck. This was a very even game. This was not a first seed versus an eighth seed. And I think we all knew that coming in, that Detroit, they have been in the playoffs for 23 straight years for a reason. They know how to get it done. They are extremely well coached, and there is going to be no give. It's going to be a tight checking series. There's not going to be a lot of space to handle the puck, and the Bruins are going to have to get on it and get after it on the forecheck and knock these guys off the puck in order to produce some more offense. And they know that going in, and I think we're going to see a little bit more tenacity on the forecheck when we come back for game two.
Leah Hextall, Boston Way, joining Gord Stellick, Rick Natras on Hockey Central Saturday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, the Sportsnet Radio Network. And Jerome McGinley, this was supposed to happen last year in Pittsburgh. He was supposed to have that feel-good end of the regular season and all that, and then a great playoff, and it didn't. And then so many years hadn't been in the playoffs for the Calgary Flames. I would think, I don't know if he says it outwardly or you could see it inwardly, that, I mean, this is a chance to cap what's been a perfect year. And he hasn't really had, team-wise, one of those for a number of years.
Yeah, Jerome McGinley, he's just been amazing this year. And we all know, anyone in Canada who got a chance to see him play so much, he's a perennial slow starter, and then he picked it up in the second half of the season, and that's exactly what he did here in Boston. But he has just been lights out for them. He's done so well on that right side and filled in so well for that void for Nathan Horton, really gelled with David Krejci and Milan Lucic in that way of the game, and I think opened up some time and space for Krejci to do even more so. But then you see again Lynette and 30 goals plus. He's had an unbelievable season. It's going to be interesting to see, though. We hope it doesn't taper off in the playoffs. I know it was just one game, but that top line, you know, sometimes they can get somewhat ghost-like. So it'll be interesting to see how it continues forward. But this is a guy who's a Hall of Famer. Like you said, he's been out of the playoffs for a long time before he went to Pittsburgh last year. And, you know, he knows what it's like to be right on the doorstep. You know, he led Calgary against Tampa. They went right to game 7, and they fell short there. So, you know, he's winding down, as they say, when it comes to his career. And you know that he wants this really bad. So I expect all the guys to not only be playing for themselves, but also be playing for the veterans like Jerome McGinley, who's brought so much leadership within to the Bruins dressing room.
Yeah, and, you know, we talk about that. In my eyes, game 6, they got ripped off. They should have won it because Tampa got, you know, let's go back a long time, 10 years. But anyways, I'm an ex-Flame, Leah. So, but you know, it would have been the second one. We were fortunate enough to win the first one. But I'm not saying this because it is only one game, and he had a great year. But and not only him, but that top line, I thought, had a hard time getting in on plays. There was a couple sequences, but not on a regular basis that you saw during the course of the year that they were able to get in and pound and turn pucks over and then take them to the net. So that was a little bit of an issue, you know, certainly. So getting his feet wet, it's been a while, right? But let me just talk to you. Because of Jerome and his situation with his contract coming in at 1.8 and then 4.2 million, I believe, in you know, he it's met bonuses, all his expectations yeah. for bonuses. How does that not only it affected you guys this year, but where do you see the team next year? You've got all the back end, tons of young talent back there, and they've got to be coming up close to, you know, either being signed or moved on. And, you know, there's some situations where Boston has made changes, but that back end has been a real nice surprise. That Miller has been a great surprise for me. Where do you see that filling out beyond whatever happens in the playoffs this year?
Well, you're right. I mean, the Bruins are obviously right up against the cap, and that's, you know, one of the big reasons at the deadline they couldn't maybe go out there and make a splash and bring, you know, that individual player in to replace Seidenberg, who's lost for the season. But, I mean, it's so hard to say, but when it comes to the kids on the blue line, I just think that Claude Julien has done a masterful job of integrating them into the system. You know, it's not just, you know, Kevin Miller, you don't even want to think of him as a kid, but yes, he's still relatively new, and he's just been such a great surprise, and he's got such a great physical presence. But then you have the Torrey Krug, the Matt Barkowski of the world, Dougie Hamilton. All their minutes have increased because of the injuries, not only to Seidenberg, but also to Adam McQuaid throughout the season. And they've done so well. It was a major theme for the Bruins in order to integrate them into the system. It was that balance of, yes, they're going to make mistakes, but you can't get on them too much about it because you don't want to blow up their confidence. And that's where I think Claude Julien did a really good job along with his assistants. So I think that back end is really set. It'll be interesting to see how things move on, because even though some of, you know, you look at Zdeno Chara and he's moving up there in years, but he's still so good, you know. And so, you know, it's such a pleasant surprise, as you said. And I just feel that they're so structurally sound back there, even though they have so much youth. So it is going to be interesting to see how things continue, because they do have a lot of assets if they have to make any kind of moves in order to, you know, I guess have some room to maybe do some other signings. But I think they're in a pretty good position. I have a feeling that GM Peter Shirelli knows what he's doing a little bit more than I.
Well, it, you know, what's also Jim Benning's a guy I worked with the Leafs way back when, so he's getting a lot of props with about Vancouver and a few spots. He could be, even though he's you talk about a quiet guy, but he loves scouting. He's developed a niche that way. Is there talk about him getting one of those vacancies in Calgary or Vancouver?
Well, I mean, I know his name's been brought up with another guy named Ron Hextall for that general manager's job out in Vancouver. But, yeah, so there's definitely some talk about him out there.
No favoritism there, right, Leah?
Not at all. But, yeah, so, I mean, his name is definitely in the mix, and so it should be, because he's done a great job. I mean, that's the one thing about the Bruins and why they've been so perennially strong enough for so many years. It's just, you know, they're ran well. And it's the same thing with Detroit and so many other franchises within the National Hockey League. But, you know, from top to bottom, it's a first-class organization. And, you know, if Jim can get that job, I don't think the Bruins would stand in their way, because they know that he deserves it.
Okay, we got to talk about being run as an organization, because Shanahan was just brought in as the president of the Toronto. We talk about Cam Neely. And there was a quote stating, and I find this amusing, because we go back to when you did win the Cup, and, you know, things weren't going well in the first round, and he was losing it, tearing, you know, paintings off the wall in the club lounge or wherever he was up in the building. And now they're saying that he stays away from hockey. Can you tell me, honestly, is that a fact or not a fact? Because I think that's BS, because I think, you know, he's a hockey guy. I'm sure he doesn't meddle a lot, but I'm sure he's in, we're talking about Cam Neely, in regards to what goes on with the Boston Bruins.
Well, I'm not in their war rooms or their meetings, unfortunately, but I will tell you, I think you just hit the nail on the head. I mean, this is Cam Neely. He has a, you know, a brilliant brain when it comes to hockey. He's in that role for a reason. I don't think he meddles in the way that perhaps some presidents have full-out control and are almost more so the GM than the actual GM is. I think he has a lot of confidence with the staff that he has helped put together. So I don't think in any way does he meddle, but does he have an opinion? I think they all have opinions. And I think that's what makes them work so well, from Claude Julien to Peter Chiarelli to Cam Neely. I mean, everybody's got to say, it just, some people obviously have a little bit more weight than others. But I think at the end of the day that Cam Neely, if he wants to say something, he's going to say something.
Well, certainly, and they talk about a successful organization.
Yes.
And when I was talking about Jimmy Benning, of course, I was remiss. The Hextall name's the number one name out there as potential general manager. So equal time for everybody. We're just glad we have the Hextall name, Leah Hextall, joining us so many times. So we love it. Two original six teams going at it. We always appreciate your time.
All right, Gordon Rick, thanks so much for having me
on, guys.
Leah. Enjoy the playoffs.
We'll talk to you later.
We'll do.
Leah, all right, bye-bye.
Leah Hextall with Nesson, reporter and anchor. Yeah. So what, she's Hextall's niece or daughter?
Niece.
No,
niece.
So yeah, niece too. Niece. And actually, Ron Hextall is the number one name that is out there.
But Jim's second. I mean, Jimmy's in Boston, and Ron's certainly back in Philadelphia. It's interesting because if Philly doesn't have any success this year, you know, they changed the coach. There was some question marks. I mean, the Carter
situation. Yeah, and Hextall, by the way, assistant GM of Philadelphia, was with Los Angeles for so many years.
And he came back home because he left. He didn't feel he had an opportunity, I believe, in Philadelphia. That's why he went to L.A. because he felt there was an opportunity. Certainly to grow, not when he first started to be the GM. Lombardi's been there for quite a while, and they won a cup. So, I mean, that carries on for a little while. But Holmgren, because there was a lot of Laviolette was there. They brought in Berube. You know, things have turned around. Didn't make the playoffs last year, spent a lot of money. The situation was Brzgalov, you know, all that kind of stuff, Gord, where they coughed up a whack of dough. If they don't have the success this year, I think Ron, his heart would be in Philadelphia. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out because of the fact, I'm sure he doesn't want to mention yet, because I'm sure Holmgren, if they don't have success, can't be that secure, I would believe.
By the way, the one game going on now, 3-3 in overtime, the Blackhawks, St. Louis Blues. The Blues are on a power play right now, so we'll keep you posted about that. We talked about the Columbus-Pittsburgh game, and all the, which starts at 7 p.m. Eastern time tonight, and all the other action that's going on. But, you know, you bring up Hextall. I'll throw Jimmy Benning was first-round pick back just when I started with the Leafs back in, 1980 or 81, and like 6th or 7th overall. And mistake was, him, Fred Bojmistruk, Bob McGill were all brought as underage to play. So
we talked about this.
But he was
a lot,
he's an 18-year-old kid. Landed. He'd had something like 111 assists in Portland. He should have played in Portland. And I always remember he would watch the Toronto Marlies practice, our junior A team, Maple Leaf Gardens. He'd have his Portland Winterhawk leather jacket. He wore it all year as a Maple Leaf, still as Portland.
Does that say anything about the bonus you gave him?
Well, just probably part of it. And then he would sit there because the Marlies would usually practice at 4 p.m.
Yep.
And Jimmy didn't really know where to go. He was kind of, but he was a student of, even then, watching junior hockey, even though he was an 18-year-old kid. And sure enough, quietly started a career in scouting. Did a great job with Don Luce and Terry Martin in Buffalo. They did a great job.
Yeah, left the game for a couple of years, got back in it, went on, you know, and now he is where he is. And I guess, you know, we've talked about Dave Fenton in Nashville as Paul Fenton in Nashville. We've talked about these other guys that have been in the game a long time, but, you know, a student of the game, and you wonder why they, you know, sometimes you wonder why they're recycling some of the older guys when you got these other guys that do their apprenticeship and that deserve the opportunity. I think Jim's one of them, and Ron is another one. They've both done it for many years, and they, you know, were players for long years, and then they've been in management at different levels for many years as well. So you need to know every aspect of the organization, and both of those guys certainly. And Jimmy, as you said, as an 18-year-old, what else was he going to do in Toronto, right?
Well, he was pretty close to the vest, too. Yeah. He's a good. Now, just before we go, we will come back. We'll talk about, because you bring up Cam Neely, and it seems like whether the move in Vancouver with Trevor Linden, the move in Toronto with Brendan Shanahan, it said, wow, Boston got Cam Neely, and they won Stanley Cups. I mean, he was able to
win, the way
he played seemed to embody the way the team played. Now, they've got a great roster out there for a number of reasons, and I'm curious the way, and for our friends listening in Calgary, Brian Burke was a bold move coming in there a few months ago. So I'm curious the two moves this past week. Well, Trevor Linden's a little longer than that.
A little different,
then Brendan Shanahan was introduced on Monday, so it's been a few days that he's the face of the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, you know, Gordon, and I said this again, if you want to, you know, maybe we can allude to this later on because it's not the Leafs show anymore, but it's got to come back to, you got to get back to your drafting. And if you look at the history of certain organizations and why they hadn't had success, first and foremost, they put themselves in, let's not rebuild, let's try to add a piece here, a piece there. Maybe we might get into the playoffs and everybody's happy, but we'll still draft around that 15th, 20th place, 13 to 20. And, you know, it's a crapshoot after the top five guys, really. You know what I mean? There's only been a couple of years that you could go 1 through 10 that maybe he's going to be a blue chip or franchise player. But now you see Toronto struggles with that. And it's no disrespect to any of the guys that were drafted, but a lot of these guys haven't materialized, right? They haven't materialized. We just saw St. Louis win the game. Boy, what a comeback. Another one. So that's Chicago down 2-0.
Wow. Two overtime losses. Well, this one too. This one as well. The Blues had a 2-0 lead. The Blackhawks came to take a 3-2 lead. It'll be a ton of controversy. Brent Seabrook getting a 5-minute major for charging a game misconduct, with just about 5 minutes left in the game. So the Blues run a 5-minute power play, tied it with 6 seconds left, and now win it in overtime. So we'll get an update on that and other things that are going on around. When we come back, we'll talk about, as we chat about Cam Neely and all the others, Colorado, they've been the model too. Patrick Waugh, Joe Sakic, a couple of ex-players, a couple of Hall of Famers coming on board. And not only
drafting.
One of the surprise teams this year in the regular season, they get off to a nice start in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So Mark Moser, their play-by-play man, will join us. I don't know if we'll get Eddie O or not. We'll find out. It's going to be tough, but we'll see if we can get a little few minutes with Eddie Olczyk. He's been doing the game for NBC that just ended in sudden death overtime. The St. Louis Blues, 4-3 winners over the Chicago Blackhawks, a 2-0 lead.
Jackman.
They take. How about that? We'll come back. Gord Stellick.
Good veteran guy there.
Rick Natras, you're listening to Leafs Nation. Not anymore. It's now Hockey Central Saturday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Overanalyzing is our business. This is Hockey Central Saturday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Shot. Big pad save from Crawford. Jackman, his shot. Back and through. He scores! Jackman's blast from the point finds the net. A 2-0 series lead.
Well, that's just heard moments ago as Barrett Jackman scores the overtime winner for the St. Louis Blues against the Chicago Blackhawks. The Chicago Blackhawks have never won an overtime game at St. Louis. They're 0-6 a lifetime in overtime games at St. Louis against the Blues. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras, welcoming you back to Hockey Central Saturday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. So, Rick, we've been talking about the 8 series that are going on.
Yeah.
That one, we'll find out again some thoughts about the hit, the 5-minute major and charging game misconduct to Brent Seabrook on David Backes. Backes didn't return to the game. And, of course, that power play led to the tying goal with just 6 seconds left by Tarasenko. We touched on the Columbus-Pittsburgh game, which comes up at 7 o'clock Eastern time. After that, we'll have the Colorado Avalanche game against the Minnesota Wild. And before that overtime goal, you're talking about, because we're saying with Cam Neely and Brendan Shanahan coming to Toronto, that in Colorado, boy, Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh certainly laid a great template.
And we've talked about that for years ago after the last lockout. Everybody wanted to be like Detroit, right? Now you see why another, 23 years in a row, make decisions by committee. Now it seems you want that figurehead, that hockey guy that can be the president. And, and as I said, like someone had mentioned before that, Cam Neely doesn't have any input. I call BS on that one. At the end of the day, he's too emotional. And we saw him here last year, and I got to talk to him, and I played against him, and I know exactly if you're going to say keep the door, he'll kick it down to make his point. So, they've got a great coaching staff there. They've got Shirelli. But what I'm saying is they were bad before they got good. And why they were bad is they didn't try to, maintain that middle-of-the-road attitude. They figured out that, let's – not give our draft choices away, spend more money on drafting, spend more money on developing, and see that. And we talk about this. I know Potter, we talked about Leanne Hextall, about Boston. The Potter came from Edmonton, which is a surprise. He can't play, for the Edmonton Oilers, but he can play for the Boston Bruins, which is pretty good, pretty surprising. But they don't, good teams that are good teams now, Chicago, St. Louis, Colorado, were at the bottom of the barrel, Gord, before they could get up because they developed and they drafted well. And what we're seeing in Toronto is pieces and trying to, through trade, it's a team through trade. They need to do a better job at drafting. And unfortunately, those late runs for all those years, just missing the playoffs, only got them in a crapshoot type of draft position. So the good teams weren't always good. They were bad, and they drafted well, became good, and then instilled that mentality or that style in their programs.
Well, the Florida Panthers will get the number one overall pick, and if they can anyway try to emulate someone that had the number one overall pick, it was the Colorado Avalanche last year. They're up 1-0 in their series against the Minnesota Wild. Mark Moser, play-by-play voice of the Colorado Avalanche, joining us. And, Mark, thanks for joining us as always, but we're mentioning all these big names now becoming faces of the franchise, like Trevor Linden in Vancouver, Brendan Shanahan here in Toronto, and really a lot of it goes back to what happened in Colorado. And take us through the 1 year of Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh and why, from a team that drafted first overall, you're now 1-0 in your first playoff series.
Yeah, you know, it's it just seems like kind of a whirlwind change of events, doesn't it, for this franchise? You know, Josh Kroenke kind of took over from Stan Kroenke and immediately instilled Joe Sakic, instilled the power in him to get this franchise to where everybody thinks it should be, and of course, where it was during his playing days mostly. And a couple of weeks later, he hires Patrick Waugh, and so the motion is set to get this franchise back. You know, and you guys were making some great points as I was listening in there about drafting and developing players. And part of it, I think, is a little bit luck, too, because it's not just that you get, you know, first, second, or third pick in the draft, but it's also when you get it, you know, who's available that year. And so the Az report did definitely enough, certainly, to get a Matthew Shane and to get a Gabe Landeskog and then to get a Nathan MacKinnon to leapfrog over Florida last year. But it's also a job of developing these young guys. And then Patrick Waugh, of course, comes in from day one of training camp, and he immediately establishes what he wants to do with his team and the mindset that he wants. And more than that, guys, he's been a tremendous teacher, and he has he's really brought out the best in players. He's put the belief in them that they can do it. You know, and he likes to relay the story early on in the season when the Avs were on that early road trip in Boston, and the team went to dinner with Raymond Bourque. Of course, Patrick and Raymond still very tight from their playing days here in Colorado. And you know, Raymond came up with the why not us mentality. You know, and I think that especially after Game One, the kind of galvanizing situation with the coach and with the players against the Ducks, you know, the guys start to think, you know, why not us? I mean, we've got talent in this room. We're starting to believe in ourselves, and it's been a process all year long of where you've seen the from day one of training camp and still by Waugh, you see that belief go from, well, we can go to the rink and we think we can beat this team, and boy, we sure would want to, you know, we're going to go to the rink and we're going to win this game. And should they not win, they come to the rink the next day, we're going to win this game. And so that's why I think you look at the season, they never lost more than three games in a row. They did that one time. And then the other times they've had two-game skids, they've immediately flicked the switch and got right back on the winning track. So it's been a real event. As much as it's been a transformation on the ice, the mental side of things and the belief system inside the players has been just as big.
Yeah, and we go back to Game One, and you know, a lot was made of Patrick slamming the wall, the partition before. And I thought, you know, and I've met some coaches over the years. And by the way, Mark, Patrick and I won a Calder Cup way back in '85 together. So we are old. We are old, right? But I mean, I saw the enthusiasm there. Yeah, I saw the enthusiasm there. And what I wanted, I think it was a great learning curve, not only for him, because everybody's waiting for it. So I'm not sure if it was by plan or design, but he showed that he was willing to stick up for his guy after that hit. I believe it was Lovejoy, if I'm not mistaken, on
correct.
MacKinnon,
yeah,
the knee on knee.
Yeah, he went knee on knee with MacKinnon. That's correct.
And I thought that was the point of bonding, the point of a young coach, young being the National Hockey League, young being his first year, and a young team saying, you know what, this guy believes in us, and we will believe in him, give him a chance. And I just see the opportunity that, Patrick has done. What surprised me a little bit is he was mostly a four-line guy for the year. I mean, some of the guys averaged about, 6.5, 7 minutes for a fourth line, which is maybe a little bit under the radar in the West. But last game, he only really played three lines. Why do you think that was, and how physical that game is? Why didn't he play the fourth line?
Yeah, it was pretty physical. I think it's a situation where, one, you're dealing with a little depth issue. Certainly with Matthew Shane out of the lineup, with John Mitchell out of the lineup, you know, it shuffles up, and we've talked about Alex Tanguay before, fellas, and his departure from the scene. I mean, the Avs were 15-1 in the 16 games he was in there, you know, and so you take these guys out of the lineup, and I think that you start to look at the depth up front. When everybody's healthy, boy, this is a deep club. When they're not, you've got to mix and match a little bit and do different things, and I think that's one of the reasons. Plus, you know, the Avs were playing from a deficit situation, and you know, you've got to get your big guns out there. Maybe you double shift this guy, give these guys some rest, and then you bring this guy out and you mix up the combinations a little bit. And you put MacKinnon back up with Landeskog in the left and Stastny in the middle, because it seems like when they need something good to happen, those guys can make something happen. And then you look at the final 3 minutes of that game. They had six guys on the ice the entire time. I mean, nobody else saw the ice except for those six guys, and kind of the guys we're talking about. And it's a situation where you're playing from behind. You got to try to get that next goal and get things evened up. So I think that's the main reason for that. I think Patrick would love to get himself a 2-0 lead and just keep rolling all four lines as much as possible, that's for sure. But it was a physical game in game number one. I you know, of course, I'm like you guys. I'm watching every game of the postseason, and there's just so much physicality all over the place. It's unbelievable. So, you know, it's probably going to be that same story coming up tonight. I know that Minnesota's going to come out from the jump here, probably looking to get back on their track.
You know, Mark, certainly not just – you look at the young talent, particularly the forwards, whether it's Duchesne who's out, Landeskog, Ryan O'Reilly, McKinnon. I know Paul Stastny's a little bit older, but still. You know, that's what jumps out at you, the Colorado Avalanche. So after that, you've got this no-name defense, basically. Oh. You've got a guy like Eric Johnson that's doomed to failure. Why you don't take guys number one overall like the Blues did a few years ago, yet he's playing 23 minutes a game. I mean, you know, talk about that part and a guy like Eric Johnson that seems to have found a home in Colorado.
Yeah, he really has. You know, I think for we'll talk about Eric first. I think about for him, it was just a matter of confidence. I think he was playing with a lack of confidence the past couple of years. You know, maybe a lack of belief in himself. And, you know, guys, when you go back and you look at his draft here in 2006, and I've looked at that draft repeatedly, he's still the best defenseman in the draft, period. You know what I mean? And, again, it's one of those, okay, the Blues need a big, you know, super stud defenseman. I think they did at that point. And he's still the best defenseman by far, in my opinion, in that draft. But it was a situation where that hangs over your head a little bit because you got Taves taken behind you and you know, other terrific players. And it's just about a confidence thing with him. I know that Patrick Waugh came in early on, but before the season began, obviously in training camp, and he said, listen, Eric, he's like, I only want you to be you. I don't care about this number one draft pick stuff. I don't care about, you know, anything that's happened to you in the past. I don't care about what, you know, what people have said about you or whatever. He's like, I need you. I need you to be a number one for me. I'm going to put you out there with Jan Hayda. You guys are going to play against the top line every single night. And I not only want good things out of you, but I expect good things out of you. And I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you be you. So go do it. And that was kind of the discussion, I think, between those two. And he's done it, you know, and he's played terrific hockey. And his game is really, really good right now. I mean, it really is. He's a big body, you know, 6'4", about 230, skates like the wind. I think anybody who saw his goal in Edmonton, the last week of the regular season could understand how he's skating. It's just terrific. You know, he's taking on the top guns every single night, he and Jan Hayda, and he's been marvelous the entire year. But you look at the whole defensive unit as a group, I think that they were underrated. I mean, I know that people had them at the bottom of the barrel in the NHL, but I always thought to myself, they have players. It just needs to kind of come together. And you look at Tyson Barrie and what he's doing right now. His offensive talents are all over the place. But he got sent down earlier this year, and Patrick Waugh said, hey, listen, go down and get your game together. We want you to go north-south, period, jump into play, play your game. He came back, and he's done just that. He's had a remarkable second half of the year into the postseason. And the other parts of it, I guess maybe it's hard to explain. I think a lot of credit goes to Andre Tourney, one of the assistant coaches, of course, and to Adam Foote, who's been brought on as a defensive consultant. You look at guys like Nate Gennon, Nick Holden, different player. Andre Benoit, of course, they acquired during the offseason. They signed him to a deal after he played some serious minutes for Ottawa last year. And none of these guys have disappointed. I think it's fair to say when you look at the whole defensive core, these guys, maybe all of them, are having career years.
Well, certainly you've got the rest of your radio voice. You'll be back at it tonight. But an exciting team, an exciting start so far. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
You bet, guys. Always my pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
Mark Moser joining us, play-by-play voice for the Colorado Avalanche. It's Gord Stella, Rick Natras, Hockey Central Saturday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. And we're hoping to get a few minutes with Eddie Olczyk. Like, he was busy right to the bitter end. A very exciting, emotion-charged game. In St. Louis, the St. Louis Blues win 4-3 in sudden death overtime. A goal with Tarasenko scores with 6 seconds left, but a hit by Brent Seabrook, 5 minutes for charging, and a major on David Backes. Also, talk about a significant player with the St. Louis Blues if he's hurt for any period of time. But this is going to be, to me, the first big test of Stephen Quintal and the NHL body that Bill Daly is more involved, the deputy commissioner said, with Brendan Shanahan out of the picture right now. This is probably the first big one they have.
And it's going to be a huge impact on Chicago being down 2-0, with Brent Seabrook, the year he had. You know, the question marks about him not going to the Olympics and, you know, the year that he did have, and Keith, certainly a Norris Trophy candidate, maybe even a Norris Trophy winner again this year. But, you know, it's going to be interesting, and I hate to say it, but if you can give a coach a $25,000 fine for grabbing his crotch and you can give a player $5,000 fine for spearing somebody into the crotch, I have no idea what they're going to give him.
So yeah, I
don't mean to make, you know, it, but those two things right there. This, to me, I didn't see it, you know, like as everybody else did. Certainly there was a lot of, you know, stuff going on Twitter. From what I saw, to me, he didn't put his elbow up, didn't leave his feet. You know, Backus was certainly had the puck extended with his, you know, he was exposed. But again, Backus is a guy that plays physical, and they're not going to look at it and say because of who it was. Because, you know, unfortunately, it's not Gretzky, but I mean...
Well, the other part is left to look at, but had the puck gone, like he left
the
puck...
Yeah, how long was it?
Was the puck gone? Yeah. Did he target the head? A lot of things. I mean, Backus wasn't faking.
Bit, yeah.
I mean, whatever. Yeah. How much did Backus put himself in a vulnerable situation? Yeah. But, again, you know,
but
you mentioned...
it's going to cost him something.
We've had a lot of crotch talk about whatever. And, you know, I think Joel Quenneville was so livid. I think he was wishing he'd saved that for today.
Yeah.
Like his crotch move the other night that got him a $25,000 fine. So it was really a motion charge. We just heard Eddie O, we won't be able to get him. We only got about 6 minutes left in the show. Eddie joins us regularly. He was doing the game for NBC, and it is 0-6 now. The Blackhawks have never won in St. Louis in sudden death overtime in their illustrious history. As a matter of fact,
it's the first time in a long time they played in the playoffs together, though.
Well, back to the 1967 when the Blues came in as the second six teams. They originally granted five teams or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Bill Wirtz or whoever owned the arena in St. Louis. So they said, we're going to find a buyer here. That's how it was back then, to unload our arena. So the Blues came in and were the model, Sidney Salomon, and that they were the model of the top team. Jock Plunk, Len Hall, then the Flyers took that over.
Yeah,
of the second
Scotty
quarter.
Bowman started there and then, you know, had
Al
such
Arbor,
a great
Cliff
run.
Al Arbor, Cliff Fletcher.
You know,
they all got fired the same day.
They went to Montreal.
Scotty Bowman, Cliff Fletcher, Al Arbor all got fired as coaches and management of the St. Louis Blues the same day.
And I believe
three Hall of Famers.
Yeah, did Cliff come from Montreal to go there or did he go to Montreal?
Yeah.
After.
That's where he started. No, I don't know if he's from Montreal. He did a little bit with the Montreal organization.
Yeah, and then he went to Atlanta, of course. And
anyway, it's
and
an interesting.
Me,
three giants in the business.
And I played there for 2 years, and we had some great rivalries. Certainly didn't play them in the playoffs, Gord. I think you guys ended up, you know, when we met up twice, the first year we beat you the one time, and then Toronto was beat us the following year. 86, we beat you. 87, you beat us. We moved on, but we never faced them. But just going into that, you know, that rivalry between them, no matter playoffs or just regular season, was scary. And we're seeing it come to a head right here. We're talking 25 years later.
Well, and again, you know, just before you had Duncan Keith, a pretty good whack on TJ Oshie as
well. On the wrist, there was a lot of, you know what,
they don't like each other.
Well, but, you know, you saw the Beckel knee. And again, the emotion gets so high and you go out of... Sometimes you go out of your way to get guys, and when they sidestep you or something, it's a reaction. I got to get a piece of them. So what is that piece? We don't care. Is it a piece of my Sherwood, or is it a piece of my knee, or a piece of my elbow, or a piece of whatever? But we saw we saw in game one the physicality and the hate. We saw in game two it just wrap it up. It's going to be interesting. This is a huge loss for not only St. Louis, if Backus certainly can't. It looked like, Gord, when he went back and hit the glass with the back of his head, there's the little ridge there between glass and board, and I thought he underneath his helmet, just at the neck part, it looked like he might have caught his head there. But, you know, you lose Backus in one case, and then you can lose Seabrook because I believe, as you said, you know, I misstated earlier that I didn't know where the puck was. I just thought it was a pretty good hit on a big guy. And unfortunately, you know, they're going to take that in consideration. So I'm thinking Seabrook will have some issues.
And Joel Quenneville, again, getting at the podium there, he right away said not commenting on the hit, just said it was a brutal loss. Tonight was brutal, which actually was this afternoon. Tough loss, down 0-2. So
it's not easy again. And this is, you know, two teams, you know, that when's the last time Detroit, right? Back-to-back, winners of the Stanley Cup. So it's been a while since you saw that. And then you've got a St. Louis team that, even after the years that Hitch has had there, if they don't perform and they don't get, you know, out of this first round and move on, and we're not talking the next round.
Well,
we need out of their conference.
They're on the verge of blowing a two-goal lead.
Yeah, so they need to get moving because there will be changes. Certainly won't be any changes in Chicago. I mean, Quenneville and Mike Kitchen have done a great job there. But, again, St. Louis is a team that is desperate, as we just talked about Bruce Boudreau, with Anaheim having two great years and being beat out in the first round last year, they really need to have success as well.
Hey, Claude Julien was another loss away, down 0-2 against Montreal from being
this
fired.
Is what we talked
last
about.
Year, yeah. Quenville, they were bouncing around on him a little bit last
everybody,
year.
And I don't know where, but where does that stuff come from? It probably comes from guys like us.
I like to start. We got a lot of time we got to kill.
You know, we haven't spent much time. I know we're not getting Eddie O, but we can talk about Montreal a little bit in Tampa if you'd like, because it is the only Canadian team. I know it's Toronto, the market, and all this, but we're talking about a team that's playing some pretty good hockey.
Very impressive.
Three-zone hockey. We're seeing depth. We talk about the first game. They got goals from... One goal from every line, 1-4. We see that, you know, Press back in the lineup after missing, I believe, about 12 games, getting in a good scrap with Gudas, making that available. We see the Vanek, Pacioretty, Desjardins. I mean, that line, God, and this is the guy, he's only 5'6" or something, Desjardins. He was ridiculed by the mayor, of Montreal. And that was before he got indicted or after he got indicted.
But my point is,
what a year he's had. In the last 57 games coming into that, I think he had 51 points or 52 points.
And look at Rene Bork, a guy that's played like a dog, coming up big.
Five games in a row, he sat out healthy scratch.
I know, and that's what you need.
That's what you do, depth.
Here in Toronto, you hope somebody would have stopped that 8-game losing streak, certainly in Calgary. As our listeners,
guys,
whatever it may be.
Whatever it was.
And Montreal, the one Canadian-based NHL team that's still in, certainly.
They got it.
Them and the New York Rangers, to me, I think.
I like the Rangers.
Two teams I'm watching saying, man, I really like their chances as far as getting
to
the final
four. First, you got the back end, and you look at Montreal's back end, and they got Weaver and all that other stuff. They're solid. They don't make bad plays. They keep the puck to the outside, and they don't get beat one-on-one very often.
Well, I'll tell you the other one as well. There's hockey going on here in American Hockey League and junior stuff as well. So marvelous Matt Brown, our producer, is just back. The Toronto Marlies beat the Rochester Americans
4-3. Movie star, Matty Brown, movie star.
Can't believe the Sooties guy. I guess he's got to return it.
Well, probably in about 10 minutes. You know, it's good. I'd let him 25, keep it overnight.
Brent Gunning, great job. Thanks very much. It's a lot of fun. We'll be doing this now. There may be no hockey as far as the Toronto Maple Leafs go or the Calgary Flames go, Stanley Cup playoff-wise, but there's all kinds of NHL Stanley Cup playoff action. We will continue for the next number of weeks, Saturdays 5 till 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is Hockey Central Saturday. Gord Stelic, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Enjoy the Stanley Cup playoff action.